take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, February 11th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here for our midweek celebration of all things marijuana legalization. We're covering everything from industrial hemp to medical marijuana, from decriminalization to legalization and to equalization and beyond. We are here every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, recording live from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon. That's right, the R is silent. So glad to have you here today, and we also want to thank our sponsor, Vapes.Buzz, where you can get 10% off your vaporizer order with the promo code 420RADIO. Visit Vapes.Buzz today. So glad to have you here. We've got plenty of news and a special guest on today's show. John Pardee from the Ohio Rights Group will be joining us at half past the hour for our activist agenda. Wow, it's like there's four or five different groups in Ohio that are working now to reform marijuana laws. John will tell us what's going on with the Ohio Rights Group and their fight to change the marijuana laws in the state of Ohio. It's America's seventh largest state by population, and of course a very important electoral prize, particularly for the Republican Party. So how Ohio goes with marijuana legalization and medical marijuana could have a significant impact on the 2016 presidential election, especially on the GOP primary side. Also on today's show, we'll have time for a radical rant on the heels of what's going on in Ohio and the other states in 2016 looking to legalize. I'm going to take a look at the question, what exactly is legalization, and is there a legalization so odious that we should not support it? We'll discuss the ethics of marijuana legalization coming up at the end of the show. We've also got a special public service announcement from Canada in our anti-drug PSA of the day, sent in by one of our listeners. It's hilarious. And if you find any of these anti-drug PSAs online, you've got a link to them, send them in to me, Radical Russ, on Twitter, or RadicalRuss@gmail.com if you want to get me that way as well. Also on the show today, oh my goodness, we have got a drug war data mining segment that's quite interesting, taking a look at the use of marijuana compared to the rate of marijuana arrests and showing how we are now, just in the past 6 years, half as likely to get busted for weed as we were in the past. We'll show you how all that works in drug war data mining. Also on the show, behind the headlines, we're taking a look at Washington State, where they are facing a glut of marijuana supply. It's the exact opposite of what happened last summer when there just wasn't enough marijuana to keep the stores stocked. Now there's just not enough stores to sell all the marijuana. We'll take a look at that right after the 420 radio news. And in the headlines today, we have got the year-end estimates of tax revenue from the state of Colorado's first year of legalized sales. We've got the first license to grow industrial hemp in Oregon, but where are the seeds coming from? We've got two stories from Missouri. First, Show Me Cannabis suing the drug task forces over their open records law and failure to abide by it. And the governor of Missouri, Jay Nixon, taking a look at the case of Jeff Mazansky, the man serving life in prison for cannabis. And we'll wind up the news with a look at the rally and tally that took place yesterday in Tallahassee, Florida, where several hundred people showed up for support of medical marijuana in the Sunshine State. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back after this.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belleville Show.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belleville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. Colorado collected about $76 million in recreational and marijuana pot revenue in 2014. The year-end report, released Tuesday, tallied about $44 million in new sales taxes and excise taxes from the recreational pot, add fees and pre-existing taxes from medical pot, which has been legal since 2000, and Colorado's total 2014 pot haul was about $76 million. Colorado started selling recreational weed on January 1st, 2014, but its first month of sales resulted in only $1.6 million for the state. By December, that figure was $5.4 million. The reason for the increase? Regulatory delays. Things will speed up as more states legalize pot and can look to Colorado and Washington for regulatory guidance. Washington and Colorado set vastly different tax rates, both based on a percentage of the pot's value. Alaska and Oregon, both still working on retail regulations, will tax marijuana by weight, similar to how tobacco is taxed. State regulators have issued the first license to grow industrial hemp in Oregon, but the farmer is still looking for seeds to plant. Growers will have to import seed to grow the state's first crop of hemp, but it's not clear from where. Canada, Russia, Hungary, Australia, and New Zealand are mentioned as possible import sources for the hemp. Officials at the State Department of Agriculture and at Oregon State University say they are working with the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration on the question of getting seed, a question faced last year by two states in the forefront of efforts to bring hemp into commercial production. In Kentucky, the State Agriculture Department sued to get the USDEA to release seeds imported from Italy. In Colorado, state regulators looked the other way as growers obtained seeds on their own. A pro-marijuana group is suing the police who lead the fight against drugs in Missouri. The organization Show Me Cannabis wants drug task forces to comply with the state's open records law. The group is suing task forces in St. Louis and Kansas City and one in mid-Missouri. John Payne, the executive director of Show Me Cannabis, said he thinks there should not be multi-jurisdictional drug task forces. Payne feels these groups are focusing on marijuana busts more than other drugs because it is easier and there is often more money to seize. Audrain County Sheriff Stuart Miller, who is on the board of directors for the East Central Drug Task Force, replied in a statement, quote, "We have in the past obtained legal counsel advising that our executive board meetings are not open to the public when discussing topics such as current criminal investigations, criminal intelligence information, personnel matters, and legal issues," end quote. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon said he will take a hard look at the case of a 61-year-old man serving life in prison for marijuana. Jeff Mazansky's marijuana case is gaining worldwide attention with more than 386,000 signatures online appealing to Nixon for a pardon. Mazansky was sentenced to life in prison without parole in 1996 for marijuana possession and distribution. A Pettis County judge gave Mazansky the toughest sentence possible through Missouri's version of the three strikes law for drug crimes. At the time of his sentencing, Mazansky had two other marijuana convictions on his record. Missouri's version of the three strikes drug law, called the prior and persistent offender statute, will go away in 2017, allowing the possibility of a parole or probation for third-time offenders. The latest numbers from the United States Sentencing Commission show marijuana traffickers only spend an average of 34 months in prison. Mazansky has already served 21 years. Several hundred converged on the Capitol for the rally in Tally on the heels of House legislation filed Tuesday in companion to a Senate medical marijuana bill in Florida. The bills lay out a regulatory structure for patients, doctors, growers, and retail stores and allow patients access to the plant if their doctor approves an appropriate need. The push for legislation comes after a constitutional amendment narrowly failed in November with 58% support, just shy of the 60% needed. The House bill differs from the Senate proposal in that it gives the option for non-smokable marijuana and specifies the medical conditions patients would be approved for. Jeff Sharkey, a lobbyist for the Medical Marijuana Business Association, said the appetite to discuss marijuana has changed in the legislature. Quote, "The legislature is recognizing that it's not addictive, or it's not radioactive," Sharkey said. "They're finding that a lot of people, conservative, liberal, and in the middle, think this would be a good opportunity for folks who have serious illnesses," end quote. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville. 420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day. The International Cannabis Business Conference is coming to the Hyatt Regency Hotel in San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, 2015. Don't miss this exclusive opportunity to hear from the experts on the future of marijuana commerce, including scientists like Dr. Carl Hart, Dr. Amanda Ryman, and Dr. Stanton Peel, policy experts like Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance, Anthony Johnson from Oregon's Legalization Campaign, travel author Rick Steves from Washington's Legalization Campaign, and California legalization pioneer Dale Sky Jones. Business experts like Harborside's Steve D'Angelo, ArcView Group's Troy Dayton, and UFCW union leader Dan Rush. Cannabis journalists like Ricardo Baca, Steve Bloom, and Doug Fine, and California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, plus many, many more. Tickets are on sale now at internationalcbc.com, but hurry, last year's conference in Portland, Oregon was a sellout. International Cannabis Business Conference, San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, International CBC.
The Green Cross has been an amazing source of cannabis medicines for my pain management. Whether I need edibles or tinctures or topicals, I'm able to combine the two or three to give me really successful pain control.
It's the delivery service that Green Cross provides is just incredible. You get your medicine and it's delivered by a person that you know you trust.
Whether we come to you or you come to us, the Green Cross delivers.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 after the hour, and today in Behind the Headlines, we're taking a look north of our border here in Oregon to Washington State, where the state's marijuana market is currently facing a glut of marijuana. What a wonderful problem to have. There's just too much marijuana up here in the Pacific Northwest. The story comes out of CNBC. Washington has more pot than it can smoke. And one of the problems that's happening here is a lot of people jumped into this market wanting to become marijuana growers, figuring they're going to make a ton of money. And now they're finding themselves in competition and finding that it's just not so easy to make money as a farmer when you don't have prohibition profits on your side. A lot of the problem here, if you want to call it a problem, developed from the fact that Washington State had has outdoor growing. In Colorado, there is no outdoor commercial growing allowed, so it's all happening in warehouses. But in Washington State, especially in those eastern expanses out there in the Palouse and so forth, perfect weather for growing marijuana, and they had a perfect summer, a bumper crop of marijuana. So these growers now are just have a flood of product. Some 45,000 pounds are estimated right now with no place for it to be sold. Part of the problem is that we had the retail licenses capped in Washington State by Initiative 502. So there could only be a certain number of these retail licensees. And even then, it was slow going getting them licensed, getting them open, and so forth. We covered the opening of Seattle's first marijuana licensee, the Cannabis City, and it was open for, I think, 3 days before it had to close down due to lack of product. The growers out there are complaining because when they first got into this business, they were able to get $1,700 to $2,200 per pound of marijuana. That's wholesale. For their wholesale sales prices. But now the prices have dropped to as low as $700 to $800 per pound. Part of the problem also has to do with Washington's taxation, where growers, processors, and retailers are all taxed 25% at each level, plus the sales tax. So that's adding up to a retail price for marijuana that is much higher than you can find on the medical or the black market. Also add in the fact that Oregon has voted to legalize recreational marijuana, and we're only going to be taxing it at $35 per ounce. So we have a situation where Tom Lauerman of Farmer Tom's Organic says, quote, they've pretty much priced themselves out of the market, end quote. Now, this has caused some flack between those who represent growers, those who represent consumers. Kevin Oliver, who's the head of Washington Normal and also involved in a farming operation, was quoted as saying, quote, the people who are complaining the loudest about the glut are those producers who came online in July and were charging $21 a gram, gouging the retailers because they were the only producers on the market at the time, end quote. Now, Lauerman and other farmers say that they're giving away some of their inventory to help build customer loyalty. And there's a theory that this could be similar to the wine grape glut that we had in California a decade ago, which led to the birth of Charles Shaw Wine, also known as Two Buck Chuck. Could there be a Two Buck Toke as the Washington pot industry searches for stability? I do not see this as a particular problem because I tend to look at this from the consumer side of things, and anything that is bringing those prices down in Washington State is a good thing in eliminating the black market and redirecting the marijuana market in favor of the consumers and the state as far as reaping some tax revenues. Prices that had been $25 to $35 a gram in Washington State are now coming down to about $15 a gram or lower, some locations with some varieties available for $10 a gram, which compares favorably to what you can find on the black market or the medical markets in the Pacific Northwest. Still a ways to go. There are locations in the medical markets in both states where marijuana can be found as low as $6 per gram, but the producers of medical marijuana, producers of marijuana in general, are going to have to come to grips with the fact that in a legalized world, it is going to be volume that sets you apart. It's going to be a Costco, Walmart type of situation here, because we are talking about a crop that is very easy to grow and which you can grow a whole lot of. The prices of marijuana are only going to continue to plummet as legalization continues to take root, because most of the price of marijuana has always been a function of its prohibition. That prohibition tax, that risk that's being taken at every stage of production and transport and sales, where everyone has to take an exorbitant cut to cover their risk of incarceration. As that falls away, we are going to find the true price of marijuana, which you will find when it's grown outdoors in great bulk, shouldn't be much higher than you would find for other fine leaf crops like tobacco. We are talking about an era where $30 an eighth is going to give way to $30 an ounce, even after exorbitant taxes. It won't be too long until we start to see prices that low out here on the West Coast, and that low price will cascade all across the country from west to east as more production comes online and more states become legal. We will have a wonderful moment in history where marijuana consumers are treated the same as alcohol and tobacco consumers, and the prices are fair and reasonable.
You're a loony.
No, I'm not. I'm a dreamer. I can see the future, and the future is reasonably priced weed. And when we come back in Drug War Data Mining, we're going to take a look at how the falling price of weed and the increasing legality of weed has led to increased consumption of weed. But is that in and of itself a bad thing? Especially if you're replacing pills and booze with it?
420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Big Daddy thinks.
Funky rollerings.
Oh yeah, this is Big Daddy, and I'll be your freakazoid every Thursday night, right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Funky Roller Rink.
11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, only on RadicalRuss.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour. An interesting post in the Washington Post today on their Wonk blog section. I love reading these articles. They usually have all sorts of great data and statistics. And the headline today is, even as marijuana use rises, arrests are falling. More people smoking more marijuana, fewer of them getting arrested. That sounds like a good thing to me. Now, taking a look at the article, they examine two data sources, the National Survey on Drug Use and Health and the FBI Uniform Crime Report. And from the Survey on Drug Use and Health, we find that in the aggregate, you know, adding it all up together, Americans used marijuana on over 3.5 billion days in 2013. Okay. And the way that the data is structured is that the survey will ask how many days a year did you use marijuana in the past year? And, you know, people give a number from 1 to 365. You can break that data down. It doesn't tell us how many times per day a person may have used marijuana. It's just marijuana use days. So the guy who takes one toke off a joint at his high school class reunion in the summer, that counts as a day. And me sipping on the vapor pen all day counts as a day. So the numbers may even be greater as far as the overall consumption, especially considering that near daily consumers consume far more marijuana. But in the aggregate, 3.5 billion days of marijuana use in 2013, that's a rise of over 57% since 2007. So it's gone up by over half in the aggregate use days. But in that same period since 2007, according to the FBI Uniform Crime Report, marijuana possession arrests fell 21%. Arrests for possession alone are down to 609,000. So the net effect of the decline in arrests and the increase in use days translates into a 50% drop in marijuana enforcement intensity. That's a stat that tells you, based on what's the chance you're going to get arrested based on the number of days you use marijuana versus how many arrests there are. In 2007, there was one arrest for every 2,900 days. In 2013, there is one arrest for every 5,800 days. So it's half as likely now on any given day that a marijuana user is going to get busted. The way they put it is that the average twice-a-week marijuana user could thus today reasonably expect to be arrested less than once per half century. So less than once every 50 years. Back in 2007 is once every 25 years or so. And a major change in the data also comes from the legalization of marijuana, but this is a change from 2007 to 2013. So for those first 5 years up through 2012, marijuana wasn't legal anywhere. However, the theory goes that marijuana enforcement has been reduced since 2007 as more states have adopted medical marijuana laws and decriminalization, especially California, largest state in the union, decriminalized in 2010. And we also find that new initiates to marijuana are actually on the decline. People whose first time use of marijuana, there were 2 million of them in 2007. 2 million first timers in 2007. That had risen up to 2.6 million first timers in 2011. But as of 2013, it's down to 2.4 million first timers. So we have fewer people that are taking up marijuana lately, even as it's become more legal. What's really driving the increase with respect to the aggregate use days is the large increase in the number of daily or near daily marijuana users. Remember, I mentioned they keep track of how many days per year you say you've used marijuana. They break this down into categories. And one of the categories, 350 days a year or more, are considered the daily or near daily users. For that statistic, in 2003, there were 3.1 million Americans who were daily or near daily users. That had risen up to 4.8 million by 2011. This is from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, the two-year substate RDAS database. So it actually averages figures from a two-year period. That's so 2002 to 2003, there was 3.1 million. And 2010 to 2011, there was 4.8 million. But still, a huge increase in the number that are using marijuana daily or near daily. Now, the article concludes that says, as a consequence, they will have a higher risk of negative health from their heavy, regular drug use, but a lower risk of being arrested. Now, I would disagree. We are seeing so many studies recently that show even constant use of marijuana, regular daily use of marijuana, is not associated with decrease in lung function, is associated with an increased protection against risk for cancers, and is found to have no significant long-term effects on mental health or cognition. The fact that more people are using marijuana daily also seems to correspond with fewer people using tobacco and alcohol daily, and could lead to many people addicted to harder drugs and prescription drugs a way off those deadly substances. That's good for public health.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Activism begins with act. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour. And if you've been following the show, you know we've been reporting from the Buckeye State, the state of Ohio, America's seventh largest state and a major electoral prize, and the plethora of groups, it seems now, that are fighting to change marijuana laws in Ohio. One group, the cartel monopolists, seem to be getting all the ink, and so I feel it's our duty to expose and give people a chance to hear from the other groups involved who have much better plans, if you ask me. Joining us by telephone today to discuss one of these groups is John Pardee. He's the executive director of the Ohio Rights Group. John, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Russ. I really appreciate it.
Oh, so tell us about the Ohio Rights Group and what it is you're planning on for the state of Ohio.
Well, we are actually, you know, the group in Ohio that's actually furthest along. We've been at this trying to get our Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment on the ballot in Ohio since the middle of 2013. You know, we have 150,000 signatures to date, and we need to get 305,000 valid signatures of registered Ohio voters in order to qualify for the ballot. Obviously, Responsible Ohio has come along now, and you know, they're going to be nipping at our heels because they've got the funding, you know, from a handful of shadowy millionaires. And, you know, so they're going to be able to, you know, not have any trouble qualifying for the ballot. But, you know, our amendment is the people's amendment. It was written, you know, by the people, for the people of the state of Ohio. You know, their amendment was written by an attorney, you know, with business interests. And I've read that document, and it's all a business plan. It's not an amendment that, you know, codifies, you know, rights for citizens in the state of Ohio, and it just locks up, you know, the industry in Ohio for generations to come. So, you know, the one good thing that they've done when they've showed up is they've energized the state. I've seen a lot of cannabis activist groups now starting to rally behind Ohio Rights Group because they know we're the only ones that can stop them. And we've got the, you know, the statewide network. You know, we've got already the signatures in the bank to qualify, you know, well on our way to qualify for the ballot, you know, and so it's going to be, you know, true David and Goliath, you know, thing going on here in Ohio this year, you know, with their millions versus our, you know, all of our all-volunteer army. Mm-hmm.
So, John, tell us some of the details of the Ohio Rights Group amendment that you've got at least a third of the signatures you need for already.
Yeah, our amendment is beautifully written. It's 1,800 words. It's very brief. It's 2 1/3 pages. And it's all about establishing the rights of the citizens in the state of Ohio to possess and to grow and to sell and to use cannabis, you know, medicinally, and also for to allow Ohio farmers to grow industrial hemp, which is huge here in Ohio because we're a, you know, giant agricultural state. So this gives us you know, an opportunity to really turn the Ohio economy around and provide patients, you know, with safe access to this quality medicine. So ours is all rights-based and versus, you know, the business model that was established by this other group. And, you know, the more we educate you know, the voters, you know, and the activists in the state of Ohio, the more they see that, you know, our plan is really for the people. And that's why we think this is important, the work that we're doing.
Okay, so we are talking about just a medical and industrial hemp amendment, though, nothing for the people who aren't suffering from debilitating conditions.
Well, no, not just yet, but we've never seen here in the United States where a state has gone from nothing, to full legal. Every state's usually kind of dipped their toe in the water with medical first, and once the voting public realizes the sky's not going to fall, then they kind of get more comfortable and start looking at the possibility of opening up the responsible adult use. Ohio's a purple state, and polling in Ohio is very favorable for medicinal. It's polling in the upper 80 percent range, where full responsible adult use is polling in the mid 50s, which anybody knows anything about politics is you need to be polling a lot higher than that, because the minute you try to put something like that on the ballot, the forces who are against legalization will plow some money into that and knock those numbers down below 50%, you're going to lose. So we think we're actually, the best fit for the state of Ohio at this time.
It sounds like a wise and measured approach. So comparing with other state medical marijuana laws, what are some of the particulars as far as can patients grow their own plants? What are some of the qualifying conditions? Are there limits on possession and so forth? Will there be dispensaries for that matter?
Yeah, the qualifying conditions are listed on our amendment. If anyone goes to our website, ohiorightsgroup.org, they can see the full language and the summary. But it does permit personal grows and for caregivers and things like that. So, that's one thing that you don't have in the other group. They're excluding growing opportunities in the state of Ohio and limiting it to just these 10 millionaire investor groups. Ironically enough, if they're successful, what's going to happen here in the state of Ohio, even if federal law softens and allows for personal grows, we will still be prohibited by state law by their amendment. So that's why we're fighting so hard. But, it establishes the Ohio Cannabis Control Commission, which is a nonpartisan, transparent, self-funded group that will, enact the rights that have been established in this amendment, and the intent is to provide and create an industry that is it gives anybody an opportunity. If anybody with a green thumb and a business mind is able to provide for their families and grow quality medicine, that's what my son wants to do. My son was in a near fatal car accident several years ago, and he went through the whole pill mill thing and started using cannabis medicinally to the point where, he didn't want to be a criminal, so he moved out to California. He spent 2 years out in California, and he became an expert grower out in California. And his bud was revered up on Big Bear Mountain, and he loved what he was able to do. And it's something he wants to do back in his home state in Ohio. And other growers here in the state of Ohio want to have that same opportunity, and they will not have that opportunity with the other amendment. They will just be hourly employees working in a 300,000 square foot warehouse.
Yeah. Well, we're speaking with John Pardee with the Ohio Rights Group proposing it's a constitutional amendment, correct?
That's correct.
A constitutional amendment for medical marijuana that is whole plant medical marijuana with the personal right to grow. And that's so refreshing to hear, John, after seeing so many states east of us that are passing CBD-only or dispensary-only marijuana laws. That sounds like it's a very important plank to you.
Yeah, actually, we're happy that the Ohio legislature has finally introduced a very limited, kind of like a CBD-only bill. It's an oil bill for, kids with epilepsy and Dravet's. And we applaud them for that. But our people are calling their legislators and telling them, hey, that's fantastic, but that's just the first step. Because, there's a lot of patients, Parkinson's patients, like my father who passed away from Parkinson's, and cancer patients and people with traumatic brain injuries and things like that who also need safe access. And so we're telling people, let your legislators know that this is a good first step, but this is only a first step. They got to keep pushing until all the rights have been restored.
All right. The Ohio Rights Group, you can find them at ohiorightsgroup.org. And I'm unclear, does the Ohio Rights Group amendment provide for a system of commercial dispensaries for medical marijuana?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, the Ohio Cannabis Control Commission establish that. And the one thing I'm hoping your listeners will understand is the fact that the other group, they're all funded by millionaires, shadowy millionaire investors, and ours is grassroots funding exclusively. So if anybody wants to see Ohio have an open and fair market, you know, we encourage them to go to highrichgroup.org and help us compete with these guys.
Absolutely. Now, there's not only Ohio Rights Group and Responsible Ohio, there's a bunch of other groups in Ohio as well that are working toward some sort of form of reform. Is there any sort of sense that with Responsible Ohio being this, you know, 300-pound, 800-pound gorilla in the room, that maybe there should be a coalition of these other groups fighting for one amendment? And it sounds to me that yours is the furthest along. Perhaps that ought to be the one everyone gets behind.
Well, absolutely. Actually, we were invited to speak at a Central Ohio Normal meeting a few days ago. We were there and Responsible Ohio and a couple other initiatives that are just getting started. And it was kind of funny because afterwards the consensus was anything but Responsible Ohio, you know, by the activists. And people are recognizing that, and we're getting a lot of support. We're starting to get some people, you know, blue chip individuals who are stepping up, you know, attorneys and business owners and folks like that saying, hey, you know, how can I help? And so it's, you know, we're pretty excited to start enjoying, you know, that kind of support. And we're starting to also get the attention of some of the national advocacy groups because that have come out against Responsible Ohio. And so we're hearing from them and we're starting to engage them in talk. So we're hopeful that we're going to get the some support across the country to help, you know, Ohio, which is very pivotal. You know, as goes Ohio, so goes the nation. So if we can do it right here in Ohio, we can encourage other states to initiate a rights-based approach and make it an open market for you know, as our forefathers intended.
Yeah, John, I'm encouraged as well hearing that news, and it's odd how sometimes having a common enemy to go against can unite all sorts of disparate factions. And, you know, I'd thought of Ohio as being, you know, that's Peter Lewis country. This ought to be something that's near and dear. I know he's passed away, but should be near and dear to his family, his estate, and maybe they'd want to throw some money with commas in it at your group. Help this out.
Money with commas, that's a good term, yeah. Yeah, we were brokenhearted when, you know, Mr. Lewis passed away. You know, we actually had a kind of a family connection, you know, there in the Ohio Rights Group, and we were really, you know, positioning ourselves to, you know, present to him what our plan was when we lost him, and you know, that was a gut punch, you know, mm-hmm. obviously more so to his family, but it really, you know, set us back, and but we're looking for our other Peter Lewis's out there, and we definitely need folks with the means to step up in a meaningful way. People who are more about freedom and free enterprise, who want to see this thing done right in Ohio. We're really encouraging, you know, those folks to contact us and help us out in a major way.
All right, folks, do it. If you've got some contacts in Ohio, let them know about the Ohio Rights Group. They're at ohiorightsgroup.org. John Pardee is their executive director. And I assume you guys have a Twitter, Facebook presence. Do you want to give those info out?
You're talking to the technosaur of the Ohio Rights Group. We do have Twitter. Our Facebook is just, if you just go Ohio Rights Group on Facebook, you can find us and like us. And I'm sure if you can go to our website, I think there you can find our Twitter feed, but I'm too old and too slow to figure all that stuff out, but we got young people who are doing that for us.
All right, somebody call the 22-year-old intern and I'll get it all sorted out. Thank you, John, exactly. For joining us today, and thank you for fighting for Ohio.
Oh, thanks, Russ. Really appreciate the opportunity to spread the message.
All right. We got an anti-drug public service announcement today coming up. Spiders on drugs in Canada. That's right. Drugged out Canadian spiders. This should be good. And then when we come back, we've got the radical rant. Anything that ends contraband cannabis is worth voting for. This might be a little controversial, so stick around.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show. The voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you're looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit Vapes.buzz and save 5% instantly, or give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby!
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
The wood spider is the most accomplished of all web-building species. Recently, scientists gave these tiny creatures a variety of psychoactive drugs to observe their effects on web building. When given a minute dose of LSD, the spider's web took on an unfamiliar, minimalist structure. When given caffeine, the web structure was not affected, but the spider's behavior was. Given THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, the spider didn't build a web. It built a hammock, where it lay all day and watched the caffeine spider go. When given alcohol, the spider built a web, found a mate, and raised over 100 young. But the mate got a restraining order, and now the spider can't go within 100 centimeters of the web. The crack cocaine spider figured building webs was for suckers, waited till the caffeine spider was exhausted, then came up behind it and popped a cap in its ass. Nice web, Mr. Crack Spider. When winter came, the marijuana spider had no place to live. It ended up in the crack web as the crack spider's bitch. For more information on the crack spider's bitch, contact the Canadian Wildlife Service in Ottawa.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 48 after the hour. The title of today's rant is Anything That Ends Contraband Marijuana is Worth Voting For. And this comes up from time to time as states are fighting to make marijuana law reforms, and questions arise among activists as to whether or not a particular marijuana legalization proposal is, quote, true legalization. And if it's not true legalization, whether or not we should vote for it. And this came up with 2010 with Prop 19 in California. Some people thought a 5x5 grow was too small and the way that it laid things out was too restrictive and it wasn't true legalization. And you had some people, especially in the medical community, that were campaigning against it. We also in 2012 had a similar problem in Washington state with I-502, whereas it legalized marijuana, it also instituted a 5 nanogram per se DUID limit and forbade home growing. Many people complained that wasn't true legalization and therefore should be rejected, especially people, once again, in the medical marijuana industry that fought against that. Now, as we move forward, we have competing groups in California and in Ohio seeking to reform marijuana laws, and some of those competing groups refer to others as not being true legalization and should be opposed at all costs. Thought I would weigh in on this a little bit by saying any legalization that makes the ballot is worth voting for. And any legalization that ends the contraband nature of cannabis is legalization. Now, you can split hairs about legalization should always include the right to home grow, should equalize the rights of cannabis consumers with those who consume alcohol, should release the pot prisoners, and so forth. But to me, folks, those are additional legalization options that we fight for once we get marijuana legal. The prime directive of legalization is to end arrests for marijuana possession. Simply put, for me, that's where it comes down to. End arrests for marijuana possession. Now, the secondary level would be end arrests for marijuana cultivation. And indeed, I do believe that's incredibly important. But if it is a give or take, if the choice is here's legalization that ends arrests for possession but maintains criminality of growing, or maintain the criminality of possession and growing, then you've got to vote for ending the criminality of possession. Now, this comes to, and of course, the third level would be end the discrimination against marijuana consumers, you know, give us equal rights and so forth. But I truly believe that ending the contraband nature of marijuana is the most important thing to accomplish. By doing so, you erase the probable cause that exists, or that is made up sometimes, by law enforcement claiming to smell marijuana, by law enforcement seeing marijuana, or by law enforcement's canine officers alerting to marijuana, whether it's actually there or not. By ending those probable causes, you end much of the interaction that marijuana consumers are going to have with law enforcement. And it doesn't matter how much you legalize. Some people complain an ounce isn't enough. It wouldn't matter if you legalized a gram. A drug dog's nose and a police officer's nose cannot smell the difference between a gram and a kilogram of marijuana. You end that probable cause that allows police to bypass our Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination. And for those who are growing marijuana, who fear that, well, if I vote for this law, growing is still illegal, it doesn't make it any more illegal than it currently is. But it provides you the extra protection of police being unable to use the smell of marijuana or the tip that you use marijuana as some sort of pretext for busting down your door and finding your grow. And I think most paramount is the fact that once you are a legitimate legal marijuana consumer, you now have power as a citizen to fight for additional recognition of rights. For example, a situation where your choice is to vote for a legalization of possession without home grow or maintain continued prohibition means that if you pass the former, you can move forward in the following legislative sessions as a citizen trying to reclaim the right of home grow. But if you let prohibition continue, you are still a criminal fighting for the right to home grow. I believe we have more leverage as citizens, and especially as marijuana businesses begin, we get more leverage with the money and the lobbying power that comes with it. Now, let's get to a particular situation, this Ohio situation. Understand a very important caveat that I'm talking about when something makes the ballot, and it is the only choice. Obviously, if more than one thing makes the ballot, pick the one that's better. Just again, to pick on Ohio, if Ohio Rights Group Medical Marijuana makes the ballot and Responsible Ohio's Marijuana Cartel makes the ballot, feel free to vote for the medical and to reject the cartel monopoly. Because at least then some progress will have been made in Ohio, and there will be some medical to step forward from to work for further legalization. Now, there could be the complaint, but Russ, what if the Responsible Ohio is the only thing that makes the ballot? Shouldn't we vote against it since it puts in the Constitution a cartel of 10 growers? No. I think if the choice is vote for that or continue prohibition, that you vote for a cartel monopoly of growers. And the reason why is because I do not believe a cartel monopoly of growers is a tenable situation. I believe it will collapse. And part of why it will collapse is people will grow anyway. They always have been. And by legalizing marijuana possession and the retail sales and having stores, marijuana stores and marijuana consumers will be more empowered to fight for greater rights. Another constitutional amendment could be proposed. And the stores and the customers could actually have the money to fund such a thing, to fight for the legal right of home grow, or to end that constitutional monopoly. If the constitutional monopoly is a bad idea, enacting it will reveal how bad an idea it is from the production standpoint. But at least thousands and thousands of Ohioans won't be arrested and have their lives ruined over a marijuana possession situation. It's always difficult in these situations to determine what is and is not a deal breaker for you. It was very tough for me with I-502 in Washington State. I-502 accomplished my number one goal. It ended arrests for marijuana possession. It reduced an annual arrest total from over 5,500 to under 200 in just 1 year. Thousands of lives were changed for the better. But to get that, there was also the acceptance of that 5 nanogram per se DUID, which has also impacted people's lives for the worse, for having to defend themselves against an unnecessary and undeserved DUI charge. And there's that proscription on home growing, not being allowed to grow at home. But to my point of view, that didn't change what was happening for people that were growing at home in the first place. They were illegal before, they're still illegal now. And there's the concern over I-502 and its effect on what may happen with medical marijuana, which, of course, I always argue isn't I-502's fault. It's medical marijuana's fault for not having become organized, and the governor who vetoed their chances to organize. But even seeing what I've seen now, in the wake of I-502, had I to do it all over again, I would still vehemently argue for the support of I-502. Because now we're hearing about bills in the legislature that will allow for home grow. They've come to the reality, they've recognized the reality that you cannot legalize possession of a plant and not legalize the personal cultivation of that plant. It just isn't working. And while some of the proposed changes to the medical marijuana side are being opposed by people with medical marijuana priorities, I think a lot of this is just overreaction. And I think that much of what is being proposed to align medical and recreational in the state of Washington is not unreasonable. It's not perfect, but we're trying to take an imperfect situation in Washington state of a completely unregulated dominant medical market and merging it with a highly, in fact, I would say overregulated, overtaxed recreational market. I think there will be a meeting in the middle somewhere, and both systems will become better because of it. We'll continue to focus on what happens all across the United States, the state of Ohio, state of Oregon, Florida still fighting for its medical marijuana, Alaska continuing to develop their regulations for its recreational marijuana, and then California. How will the Californians come together? The business interests there aligned with medical marijuana, the hardcore true believer activists who won't settle for anything less than what they consider to be true legalization. It is the story of 2015, I'd say second only to the election for president. And that election for president will be very affected by these fights across the country for marijuana legalization and medical marijuana. More states are starting to recognize that medical marijuana is inevitable and that CBD only won't cut it. And more progressive states are starting to recognize if they don't legalize marijuana soon, they're going to miss out on the glory days of big marijuana tax profits. We'll be here to cover it for you every weekday, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on 420radio.org and RadicalRust.com. But that's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. Hour 2 is up next with more stories, news, and views you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at Rolla J Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.